Blog Talk Radio. With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Yep, what a really gloomy day it is here in New York City. It's not pouring, it's raining, but gloomy. But our show won't be gloomy. Yeah, we're talking clocks and food. That's what we're talking, really. Because first, we're going to have Woody Young versus Woody Allen, who's the president of Kit Kat Clocks, to tell us about the company, how they tick, you know? The cat clocks with the big moving eyes and the tail and moves back and forth. That's one. And then we're going to have Jake's Steakhouse in East Meadow, Long Island, and I got the general manager. We're going to talk about steaks, you know, with the different cuts, how do you order them, et cetera. And also they have a big thing with beer there. And then the third thing is macaroons. Well, macaroons versus macarons, which actually is macarons is the highlight. Because they're different from macaroons. It's the French style of way. So right now, I'm not sure. I got two people. Let's see who I have. Who do I got on the air right now? Who is this? Hello?
Hello? Yeah, Merle?
Yeah.
That's Johnny Chuck.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wait, hold. Oh, this is really funny. Wait, okay. Just hang on in there a second, okay?
Sure, Merle.
Okay. Hi, Woody?
Yes, right.
All right. Can you... I did something kind of weird. Okay. So can I, and I forgot that I had somebody else calling in first, and
okay.
I have to talk. Okay. So call me back, like, in 15 minutes.
Okay.
Hold on again, so you don't have to, like, be on the
All
phone
right.
and hang
I'll call
on.
You back
okay?
in 15 then. Okay.
Okay, you got it.
Thanks.
Okay, bye. Okay, I got you there?
Yeah, Merle.
Okay. This is so weird. You know, I have to quickly tell you
back?
What happened. Huh?
Should I call back another time?
No. I have to tell you what happened. It was really funny because I'm looking around. I'm going, I scheduled the show, and I'm thinking to myself, I had somebody for 2:30, and I wrote a note about that, and I'm going, who the hell did I, and I couldn't remember in the entire show of who I had on, and I'm going, I'm looking at my email. Anyway, let's just get to talk to you.
That's okay, bro. We'll never forget you here. You can count on that. People always remember Merle.
I'm forever talking about you. Gotta tell you, every time I eat at a restaurant and they're serving lobster, I say, hey, you know this? I got this place to tell you about, and they're very interested. Well, you
good.
Tell us about it. Tell us what you do.
Well, we're in Maine, and what we do is we shuck lobster in a big mother shucker. And kind of our model for our lobster is I'm too sexy for my shell. And what people, a lot of people come to Maine and they love the experience of having somebody cook a lobster dinner for them. I used to have a little restaurant with my five kids. We did that a lot. We had a lot of great people from New York come in the summer. And something interesting happened for me. I've been cooking lobster all my life and cooking lobster dinners. And then people wanted the Lazy Man lobster, and they wanted lobster meat on salads, and they wanted it on lobster rolls, they wanted it on pasta, anything. So I found a way to actually to extract the meat from lobster in the raw form, which is almost impossible to do. You can do it after you cook a lobster. Of course, you can take the meat out, and the meat is great. But if you don't happen to have a live lobster that you're cooking, and there's a frozen tail or something, it's very difficult to take the meat out and not have it stick to the shell. And what we do is we actually have some technology that's been developed where we can actually remove the meat in its raw form, which a lot of chefs all over the world now love, because they don't have to cook the lobster themselves. They don't have to worry about the lobster in the kitchen or the smell. They don't have to worry about having labor take the meat out for them in some way, but in no way can they get it out raw, and that's what we do.
And I understand, like, in terms of, like, it's like the most humane way of killing them, so to speak. I know people go crazy. They go, oh, I don't want to take that live lobster and put it into the boiling water, and it starts screaming and went,
It's a real issue, and the further you get from Maine, the more of an issue it is. We found that a lot, particularly on the West Coast, where people where they love lobster meat, but they're not quite so familiar with how to cook lobster. And so Whole Foods has actually stated that our way is the only humane way to kill lobster. What it is, it's water pressure. We don't use any chemicals or any preservatives. We don't use any heat. We just use pure water, and we put it in, and we add in our machine, which, again, we call the Big Mother Shucker, and it just basically adds incredibly high pressure, and it kills the lobster within 6 seconds. It's almost instantaneous. And what it does when that pressure releases, the meat inside the lobster is no longer attached to the shell, so we hand shuck every lobster and we just pull the meat out, and the meat just slides out very simply. And a lot of the most famous chefs and a lot of great chefs and James Beard winners and everybody and all over the world are starting to serve our product now.
So one of the questions I think I was wanting to ask you, because I'm curious. When you take a lobster, if you're going to cook a lobster, it's okay to, if it's alive, you can boil it or steam it.
Right.
But if you want it killed before, because they'll ask you, do you want it, you know, they have to, I think they use a knife in a certain area.
Yeah, they do. They do something. I'm not quite sure what they do.
But the question I have is, when they do that, they always have to remove something.
Yeah.
We
just want to remove the meat. That's what we like. We think, you know, we think lobster is the best celebration food in the whole world, and it's really more about food, not the animal. And people, I don't blame people for not wanting to put it in a pot or not wanting to, you know, smell up their kitchen or worry about it, you know, getting all over their clothes or whatever. And that's kind of what we try to take that out of it and make it so that you can eat, you know, the pure, delicious lobster meat. And you can do it in a way that you don't have to recook it. So there are a lot of things all over the world. We've won awards for a lot of value-added products that people really have never used lobster for before. And, you know, it's a great way for people to really enjoy lobster in many different ways. For instance, lobster ceviche we have and different products like that, you know, even lobster sushi, because what our process does is it actually kills all the bacteria and the E. coli and the salmonella.
You know, I wondered about that because I was thinking about that, thinking, wow, you know, like I wouldn't have shrimp. you know, raw. And so
right.
looking at that, you did that. So, all right, so now I understand why it's okay. When you said
yeah.
that it kills the bacteria,
yeah.
so it's okay to, well,
right.
you don't want to, like, just take it and just start chewing on it. I mean, the whole thing,
no.
you want to, you know, the ceviche, you know,
right.
or sushi kind of thing. Okay,
right.
now that makes sense.
Well, the reason is because the technology we use was actually developed by NASA for food safety purposes. And it's very high pressure. It's just pure water, nothing else, but it's very high pressure. I mean, our machine can go up to 80, 90, 100,000 PSI, which is just incredible pressure, but for a short time. And what it does, it just kills the cells of any bacteria or virus that might be in there, so that it basically just makes it as safe a food as you can eat, and it extends the shelf life as a fresh product. And it also tenderizes the meat a little bit, but it makes it so you can just eat it raw if you wanted to. I mean, FDA has said that, so it just opens up a lot of new creative ways to serve lobster, which of course a lot of the great chefs, you know, are very creative.
So I want to also to kind of like. Kind of clarify, it's not like you got your own fishing boats to do this. You get the lobsters from...
No. In Maine, Merle, we have about 6,000 fishermen, and each licensed fisherman has his own boat, and he'll have a stern man work with him, and he's limited to 800 traps. And it's a very sustainable fishery. And actually, I chair the board now. We're going after certification for Marine Stewardship Council sustainability certification, which we expect to have in another year. But it just shows that the way that the lobstermen catch the fish in Maine, the way they fish, they use sustainable methods. They do it voluntarily. They always have, because they're very concerned about keeping the fishery you know, economically sustainable for their families and the fishing communities for generations, and that's the way it's worked. It's really, they should be applauded for what they do, and the way they do it when they catch it. My daughter works on a boat. She's a sternman on a boat, and what they do is that they'll come in at the end of the day, and the captain with the license, you know, they'll sell their lobster to the guy at the wharf, and there are different wharfs around along the coastline of Maine, and then we buy from those the wharf owners who have maybe 10 boats or maybe 100 boats at their wharf.
Now, let me just ask, when these lobster boats, you know, when they come back, as they come back, they already weigh the lobsters, so they know whether you're getting like a pound and a quarter and things like that?
No, they don't. What they do is they'll put them all in a crate, and then basically crates are sold in 90-pound crates, and then they'll sell them on the dock, and the dock owner will buy it, and then he may sell just what they call run, which is just whatever's in there, and it'll weigh 90 pounds, and you might buy that, or a dealer might buy it and then grade it. And they'll take, there's different shell grades. Some are harder, some are softer. And the harder ones, of course, travel further. So let's say, like in New York City, there are a lot of restaurants and wholesalers who buy lobster from Maine. And they'll take the harder shell, and they'll grade it for not only shell quality, but size. Like a select, you know, might be like a 1.75 to 2-pound lobster or something, which a lot of restaurants like to serve. So
what I'm asking in terms of for you, are you looking like, are you always like, are they always like a one and a quarter or one and a half that you're using?
No,
everything?
No, we buy generally run, which is just whatever the fisherman catches, he puts in the crate, the 90-pound crate, and we buy that. So, I mean, that's really the quickest and the easiest way for.
Oh,
everybody.
I see. Because I remember, like when you were doing the lobster tails, I remember you had like a, sort of like a a scale, so you got two lobster tails and the combination weighed a certain amount.
Yeah. We do that after we process the lobster. We might take, like, for instance, like we grade every tail. So every tail is a certain size, like a 3 to 4 ounce, 4 to 5, 5 to 6 ounce. And then you're absolutely right. That's what we're doing today. As a matter of fact, we're doing some twin tail packs of our Easy Shuck lobster tails. So we'll take, like, today we're taking the 5 and 6. We're doing a 10 ounce twin pack. So we'll put them on a very, you know, delicate scale that has about 8 covers on it, and that'll tell us, you know, the two to take that are closest to 10 ounces, because everything has to be sold in a net weight in retail, right? You can't go under a certain weight. You have to be like at least 10 ounces or above. You can't be below if you're selling a net weight in a retail store, which is the way it usually is.
Well, I also want to say that, like, you can get them, like, if you're getting them, you can get, like, looks like a whole lobster that's in a, like, packed in a net.
Yeah, whole frozen. We have a whole frozen raw, which is, again, a lot of people, you know, people traditionally in the process and business, everything has gone out the door as a cooked product. But if you're, you know, lobster is a luxury item. It's a celebration item. So you don't want to buy, you know, steak in a store that's already cooked and then go home and cook it again. Or a chef doesn't want to do that. So the market we go after, the people that really appreciate the fact that they're cooking it for the first time. So different from everybody else in the country, basically, our whole frozen raw lobster are raw rather than cooked, which people really like. Actually, we sell those all over the world. And same with our meat. And again, to get into the value-added items, which is where I'm quite sure that we think that Maine lobster is headed, certainly where we want to go is, you know, if you remember, we had the split lobster where we actually can remove the claw knuckle meat and put it in the cavity of the lobster and the tail, and it's split. And it doesn't stick to the shell. It's never been cooked, so you can cook that yourself, broil it, grill it, do whatever you want to do, but you don't have to fool with the shell. The meat comes right out, and it's right there. We sell a lot of those to restaurants and cruise lines and stuff like that, where people want the experience, but they don't want to have to, you know, break open the lobster and get the mess. I mean, I don't blame them. It doesn't bother me, but I've been doing it all my life, so I can see where people wouldn't want to do it.
Now, just so people can get the website, it is what? www.
Oh, it's shucksmaine.com. So it's S-U-C-K-S, Shucks, Maine, like the state, with the E on the end, MAINE.com.
Okay.
So we love to hear from people, and we love to hear from people how they use product, you know, how the creative ideas that they use, because that's what we really like to do. We like to put new stuff in shows and win prizes with it, even if we never make it and sell it. It's always fun to do, because lobster is just that way. It's a great creative food.
Right. All right, John. thank you.
Merle, I'll run, but I just want to tell you too that next summer in Portland, we're going to have we're having our world championship lobster chef contest. We had our first one in Hong Kong in September. And we have our Asian winner who is going to be coming to Portland. And then we'll have one in Brussels this winter and one in Boston in the spring at the Boston Seafood Show, International Seafood Show. And then we'll have one from Maine, and then we'll have them all show up in Portland. So maybe I'll call you and make sure you get up for that next summer in Portland.
Okay, you got it.
All right,
John. Well, I'll be in touch with you to talk to you more about the Thanksgiving. You know? I'll get into that another time, okay?
Yeah, please do. Thanks, Merle. You're the best. Bye.
Bye. Yes. From food to clocks, okay.
Yeah,
hi, Woody. Oh, gosh. The clocks. How, you know, I got to ask you something. Like, how far back do we go with these clocks?
Well, the famous Kit Kat clock started in 1932, and it was to bring a smile during a time of depression, and they wanted to create a clock. Earl Arnock is the designer, creator of it back in that, you know, I'm not that old, so, and he's passed away now, but he started back in Oregon in 1932, and they started making them in the 30s there, and became very popular in the after the war, when the war was over, they started to just, their popularity just really increased because everybody wanted to get, you know, out of the war mind and set, and Kit Kat was there bringing smiles to people, and they had remembered it, and it became as popular as Hula Hoop, and really, and Lucille Ball used to buy them by the dozens and give them out as gifts, and it was extremely, extremely popular, and it's been going on. The company moved to Seattle to help Boeing build planes during the war, and they stayed in Seattle, and then the original owner of the clock company, not the designer, he sold it to his sales manager, who then moved it to California in 62, and his son moved to California with him, and they started making them down here in Southern California, and it's been here for, will be 50 years next year.
Wow.
And we're going into our 80th anniversary, and we'll be in the, to celebrate it, we're going to be in the Pasadena Rose Tournament Parade of Roses parade, and have a big float there, a big 55-foot float with a three-story Kit Kat, fully animated. And
a three-story?
I was just there yesterday.
Wow.
They're working on the float, and they have the clock all operating. And everything, and it really looks great.
Now, that's not something people could buy then, huh?
Excuse me?
That's not something that people could buy, huh?
No, they can't. They can buy the clock if they want to buy the clock. They can, of course, go to our website and buy it at KitKat.com.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. In terms of the clocks, are they all the same size? I know there's... You have a whole variety of, like, so kind of styles kind of thing. But
well,
are they all
we
the same,
have
like,
the original, yeah. The original size is 15 and a half inches from the top of the ear to the bottom of the tail. And that is the classic, and that's the one that most people buy. We have one that is three-quarters the size we call Kitty Cat. And it's a little over 12 inches. Tall from ear to bottom of the tail. And it's popular, but not as popular as the regular size. Now, we also have in the regular size and in Kitty, we have Lady Kit Kat that instead of having a bow tie, has a pearl necklace and false eyelashes. And she comes in different colors, as does Kit Kat come in different colors. And then in the Kitty Cat, it also has different colors to it, and it comes in Miss Kitty, and it has a little pearl necklace on it and false eyelashes as well. So we have a variety, and we have the two sizes, different colors, both male and female, and makes it really fun.
I have one sitting here in my computer room, and it's nice. You're supposed to hear the ticking of it because of the mechanism, right?
You're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there is a very little tick actually, depending on the ambience you have in the room. If there's any anything else going on in the room, you can't hear it
at
all.
That's true.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's
a lot
of people
annoying.
Have them in their bedrooms and sleep with them all the time, and no problem.
Oh, okay.
But there, you know, some people actually would like them to. They've actually asked us to make them a little bit louder so that they can hear it, and they want. You know, in kitchens, they're often in kitchens, and the lady, we've heard this comment many, many times that they feel that Kit Kat keeps them company while they're making dinner. And really feel like they have a friend with them in the kitchen.
That's so cool. I have cats. They haven't seen it yet. I don't want them to like think it's a toy.
Well,
I have it, you know,
you
up on the wall.
That's one of the biggest things that problems we have with cats is that if they can get to the cat, they go on the cat and try to get to the tail, and that has been a problem.
Yeah, because it's something moving, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great. And also, I understand that there's an addition you can get, like a football helmet.
Yes, we have a football helmets available in multiple different colors so that they can customize it to their school and have that, and that's a lot of fun. And
yeah, I forgot I had to ask you for one because I work with a women's tackle football team here in New York.
Well, the many different colors. All the teams you have to take.
Yeah.
What we have is we have a white one, and then we have other ones with the different color stripes on them, like blue or red or orange,
right,
or purple, and down through the center, and they look good, but it's just we have different things like that. We have beach towels, and that's a lot of fun, and they're very colorful.
Well, I also want to make sure, and the reason I want to comment on this is because this, I think, is a great gift-giving idea for the holidays.
Well, it is, and actually that's where we really do shine the most is in gift-giving. We have many people do that and give gifts on it, and one of our biggest things that they do is give gifts all over the world, in fact, and they go to our site and
mm-hmm.
They have it shipped to whoever they're going to give the gift to, and it becomes very popular that way.
Well, the comment that I also want is that we're not dealing with hundreds of dollars or something like that. About $55?
Well, the small one, the black small one, Kitty Cat, goes as low as $40 to start with, and then the big classic goes for $50, and then the other ones they go for a little bit more, but you know you have it in a range that most gifts are, and it makes a really nice gift.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to push this, because I try to find some to write about gifts that are what someone doesn't have or things like that, and I'm sure not everybody gets to enjoy having a Kit Kat clock.
Yeah, this
and
is a.
Not, And it's not something you're just going to put on your shelf and never use.
Right. This is something that we find, and we get. We have over 25,000 dues-paying members in our Kit Kat fan club, and we get all kinds of comments. So we really have a lot of people on our face page, and they tell about their stories. And one of the biggest single things is I received this from whoever, whether it's the mother, the girlfriend, a relative, or just a friend, and I received it, and it brings back special memories to me. And they are really, this is more than, it's something that when you put on the wall and you received it as a gift, it's even more special, because every time you see it, you remember the person who gave it to you.
Yes.
And it brings out a smile in the person.
Yes.
It brings a smile. See, when they see the clock, it brings a smile out of them. So they always feel good, and then they feel good about the person who gave them, and that it reminds them of them. And of course, I've had people tell me, they says, you know, I it reminds me to call my mom. She gave it to me, or it reminds me to of what to do and everything else connected with that person, and it brings back tremendous memories, and they really like that.
What is the website?
It's kit-cat.com. KitKat.com. You spell it with
okay.
You spell cat with a C, like you would regular, just kitandcat.com.
Great. Well, I already started writing about this, so it's already published in one paper. I'm just going down my list of where I'm publishing it. Because when I find something that, here's a great idea for a gift, as opposed to somebody has to get a gift and they just get something because to show you got a gift. You
right.
know what
and,
I'm saying?
And this is an American icon. It's made in America.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, for 80 years, and it's just a beloved icon that has just continues to go on, and people, love what it. They love the sentiment. In other words, when our logo is KitKat brings out the smile on you, and they just love that feeling.
Yeah.
So it makes a gift that really keeps on giving. I mean, it isn't when you just give it to them and, they use it for a while and they stick it in a drawer like they do a
pot right.
hand or whatever.
Right, that's why I like it, too, yeah.
They put it on the wall and for years and years they just, have it and they last for many years. Some of them have last very long periods of time, so it's special. And, of course, if they have children and they want to give it to them, they can actually, because they have different colors and they have different sizes and then boys and girls, and they can pick out the one that just fits for the person they're giving it to.
Okay. Well, Woody, thank you. I really appreciate that you're calling in to telling us about this. And as I said, I'll get the word out there. Yes, and very important that I'm glad you mentioned that it's made in the USA, too. It's not,
right. Really, really proud of that, and I've really worked hard to make sure it stays that way.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well,
nice
thanks again, Woody.
Thank you.
And I'll be talking to you again, I'm sure.
All right.
I'm probably going to have, I may have a question or two while I'm writing it, while writing the article. Okay?
All righty.
All right. Have a great day, and thanks again.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye. Okay. Well, now, from talking about clocks, we're going to talk about food. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Merle. How are you?
Oh, just fine. It's fun. When it happened, I couldn't remember who I was going to have on the air. And I'm thinking, I'm looking emails and all this other stuff. And all of a sudden, the person who I wanted on the air called in at the same time that I had the guy talking about the clocks. And I'm going, oh, right, that's the guy. And the thing is, we were talking about lobster.
Okay.
And the thing is, if this is a guy, I don't know if I had told you, this is a company in Maine, and what they do, they shuck the lobster. And so that the chefs are now being able to get, like, the raw meat.
Right.
To cook, or if it comes like a whole lobster, because of the way it's shucked, it's when it comes out of the shell, you can pull it like right out of the shell. It's easy. You don't have to deal with stuff. Anyway, but let's get to steaks, because the comment was we were talking about, because people don't, when people are getting steaks, people don't get frozen steaks. It's like, you know, when you get lobster, we don't have a choice. Either you have the facilities where you're going to have the live lobsters in your restaurant,
right?
Or you have them, you know, like or most places will, for instance, like you'll get frozen cooked lobster tails, right?
Right.
That kind of a thing.
A lot of places do.
Yeah, and so the comment was that he said to me, "Well, no one ever gets frozen cooked steaks." And it's true.
No, you can't
right.
do that.
you can't do that, right? So I thought that's true. So
very important to have nice fresh beef.
Yeah. So let's say, but I think it's probably easier to get the raw beef than it is to get the live lobster.
Right.
I mean, you're not getting. It's not like you have to order the cow.
No, fortunately, we don't have to do that. we wouldn't have the place to put them in anyway.
Okay, so what I want to do is let's get into the steaks, and then I'll get into the beer.
Okay.
The thing I wanted to discuss is in terms of cuts of steaks. You go into a steakhouse and go, oh, what's the difference between this and this? So let's just kind of go down the list of what you have there. And, like, what's the difference?
Okay. Well, we have several different cuts. We have basically what we do is we take the short loin, which is the tenderest part of the cow, and we butcher it in house. And from the short loin, you're getting your porterhouse, your T-bone, and your shell steaks. Now, your porterhouse obviously has a bone. And one side is going to be your strip steak. The other side is going to be your filet. The strip is going to be a little bit fattier, little bit more flavor, still tender. The filet is going to be your most tender cut. And it still has a lot of flavor when it's on the bone, as it is with the porterhouse and the T-bone. The T-bone is essentially the same thing as the porterhouse, except it's a portion for one, so it's just a little bit smaller. But it's still a nice size steak. I mean, probably I don't know that I could eat a full one myself. It's a good 28 ounce or so steak. And then you're going to get the strip steak, which is when you get down towards the end of the short loin. You don't have any more of the filet, so you just have what's a bone-in strip, which is a great combination of flavor and still tenderness. So those are what you're getting from the short loin. And then we also have your regular filet from the tenderloin, and we serve about a 12 to 14 ounce filet. We also serve a petite filet, which is going to be about 8 ounces, and they're going to be your most tender steaks. You can just about cut them with a fork. They're so tender. Still have good flavor, but they're going to be a little bit more lean. All our steaks are 28-day wet aged. So what we do is we age them in cryovac bags. They age for 28 days in their own juices, and what that does is it breaks down the connective tissue in the meat and tenderizes it, and also intensifies the flavor. And we also have a dry age steak, which is our ribeye. Ribeye is going to be obviously from the rib section of the cow, and it's going to be your most marbled, fatty, flavorful steak. It's personally my favorite. Ours is actually a 35-day dry aged steak, which is going to be a little different from your wet age steaks. With dry aging is actually a very interesting process. You're not aging the meat in a bag. It's actually not covered, and you age it in a temperature and humidity controlled room. It's got to be at about 60% humidity and around 40 degrees, a little bit less. And what it actually does is the meat shrinks. It sucks out the moisture, not the juices, but it sucks out the moisture. It shrinks the meat and thereby intensifies the flavor, gives it a somewhat nutty flavor, very, very intense flavor. It's a little different from wet aged. With the wet aged steak, you're going to get a little bit more of a juicy steak. With the dry aged steak, you're going to get a little bit more intensity of flavor. But again, it does, it actually shrinks the steak, so it, which in turn makes it a little bit more expensive.
So when you're going in, unless you're going into a steakhouse, if you go to some average restaurant,
right?
When you're ordering, can you say, is this wet age or dry age? Would they even know, or?
I would hope most good restaurants would know. They absolutely should know, especially when you're talking wet age versus dry age, because it does make a big difference in the flavor. I personally love a good dry age steak. I like wet age too, but I personally prefer a dry age. But many people and steak connoisseurs that I know prefer a wet aged steak, so it's something that I would hope most restaurants would know. They would know whether it's wet aged or dry aged. They would know where the steaks are coming from, and whether it's prime, choice select, what the grade of the beef is.
Now, how does that differ? What is the those terms? What does that mean?
Well, it's just the quality of the beef. A lot of steakhouses use prime. Some use choice. It's just the quality of the beef. Prime beef is about it's the top 2% of all beef that's produced in the country, whereas choice would actually be there's several levels of choice. And it's actually the top 50% encompasses choice, but again, there's several levels. What we use, all our beef is actually hand-selected by the owner, aged in the owner's facility, and all our beef is within the top 5% of beef produced in the country. So it's either some of it is prime, some of it is the highest grade choice that you can get. It's really just the quality of the beef. It comes down to the how tender the beef is, the marbling in the beef, and where it comes from. We get our beef from Schuyler Farms in Nebraska, which is one of the richest areas in the country for cattle.
Oh, I didn't know that. So in other words, if I do a press trip in Nebraska, I should make sure I have beef, huh?
Absolutely.
So now, in terms of like places, like let's say you're getting not just the steak. In other words, it's steak is in with sauce or things like that, and it's not necessarily a steakhouse.
Right.
Can you ask them? Would you say, what kind of meat do I
have?
Yeah,
absolutely. You can ask them, and they should know. They should know. Some restaurants might not, but I would most places will know exactly where their beef is coming from.
Well, the other question is, there's this whole big thing about Angus beef. What's that?
Angus beef is just a kind of beef. It's top quality. It's just a high quality beef. It comes from several different places. There's several different places you can get it. It's just good CAB certified Angus beef. It's just one of the better brands of beef that you can buy.
Does it really make a difference in terms of flavor or tender or whether et cetera? Whether like your restaurant and we have Angus beef. Does it make a difference? Or
yeah, absolutely.
If you have a choice.
It absolutely makes a difference. I mean, those Angus beef it's a better quality. It's going to be richer and fattier in flavor, and And also, you know, it comes from, you know, the higher quality beef, the, you know, more responsibly raised animals. You know, they're going to be, I mean, most of our beef, for instance, is, you know, it's grass-fed and corn-finished. So the cattle does spend time actually in pasture. They're not just in factories, you know, just eating nothing but corn. They actually do spend time, you know, grazing, which actually is good for the cattle and good for the beef that you're getting, because those animals are actually free to roam and they have less stress on their bodies. So, you know, they aren't using the muscles as much, so you actually end up getting a more tender a steak out of that cattle.
Okay. So, and I understand, by the way, I had the, you have a special filet mignon that you serve there, huh?
We do. You're talking about the Jake's filet, I imagine.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we top it with some blue cheese and frizzled onions. It has a little port wine reduction. Yeah, it's a very, very popular item. In fact, Peter Giannotti from Newsday reviewed us, and that was one of his favorite dishes. He said it was absolutely outstanding. So,
yeah,
yeah, it's a pretty popular dish.
Now, also, of course, you know, for people who don't like steak, you know, they can get something else.
Oh yeah, we have some nice seafood dishes. We have a cedar plank roasted salmon. We actually roast the salmon on a cedar plank, so it gives it a nice smoky woody flavor. We have a nice crispy red snapper. We also serve a Bredetta di Mare, which has 7 different kinds of seafood in a nice tomato basil sauce with a little fragola pasta. We have a great chicken dish. It's a brined brick roasted organic chicken, all natural chicken. What we do, we brine it, so we soak it in you can do brine a number of different ways. It tends to be water, a little salt, sometimes sugar. You can throw some different spices in there, but you brine the chicken for about 5 or 6 hours, and it just gives it a much more intense flavor. It tenderizes it, and it just makes for just the best kind of chicken I've ever had.
You're getting me hungry. I may have to come out there now and eat that.
Yeah, you had steaks the last time. You gotta try the chicken.
I want to get into the beer. I want to tell my audience, like, you have this about this beer that I had called Quack, K-W-A-K. Tell my audience what to describe this.
Quack is it's a Belgian beer. It's full bodied. It's amber in color. It's a little sweet. It's kind of malty, which a lot of Belgian beers tend to be. I would classify it probably as a Belgian strong ale. It's got a high alcohol content. It's about 8 to 9% alcohol, but it doesn't really hit you until you're done drinking it. You definitely don't get huge. The alcohol doesn't kill you. It's very well balanced. It's got a little toffee, coffee notes, some nice spice. It's complex in flavor, but very well balanced. It's a delicious beer. Comes in a nice. It's kind of a small version of a yard glass. It actually has a wooden handle that you put the glass in. The glass has a round bottom, so you couldn't put the glass on the countertop without the handle. It would fall over. And that's really more for, you know, presentation. But it really is an excellent beer. It's an expensive beer,
but well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorites.
Well, you know, people spend money for a good bottle of wine, so.
Right. Yeah.
And your thing is to do beer versus wine. In other words, you do have wine, but it's more the thing that makes you stand out in terms of as a steakhouse is having the beer as well,
right.
of a long list of beers.
Right, and
we
definitely have a nice wine selection. It's a small, focused, well chosen list, but the beers are kind of more what we're known for. We have about 14 beers on draft and 14 in bottles, mainly craft beers, so smaller producers. People tend to think of, having a nice big full-bodied red wine with a steak. I actually think that, a good beer and a steak is a great pairing. And it's something that you tend to see great wine lists in steakhouses. You don't see a lot that have a serious beer program. So that was definitely something that we were shooting for to, separate us. Our other, the original Jake's in the Bronx has a great, beer selection. That's something they're known for. They actually have a more extensive list than ours. They have about, 40 or 50 different beers available there. Very interesting selection.
I guess I may have to go there just...
that's the original. Been there for 10 years, and we do very well there. So it's a neighborhood gem, and as good as any steakhouse in Manhattan.
Well, I taste the steaks, and I have to tell my audience I did like your steaks better than Gallagher's.
Oh, thank you. Quite a compliment.
Oh, definitely. And even with Gallagher's, like going there, and I could see all the steaks, you could see, look in the room and see them aging and whatever.
Right.
For whatever reason, I enjoyed your steaks more. And the thing is, one of the things that is, if you don't start, I mean. If you get a steak and you kind of say don't put seasoning on it or whatever, you could really get the taste of the steak without the spices are, and that's what kind of makes a good steak, if you can get that flavor.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to mess the flavor of the beef, and that's very important. What we do is we season the steak with a little bit of salt, not too much. You want a little salt to bring out to bring out the flavor without overpowering it, and then we just put a little brush of butter on the steaks, and doesn't really need much. A good steak, we have sauces that are available. Some people like to have some steak sauce or a béarnaise or a Bordelaise or something like that, but for me, a good piece of prime meat doesn't need much more than a little salt and maybe a little touch of butter. And many people like it completely dry, nothing on it, maybe just a little bit of salt.
Well, I wanted to get back to the beer that you have. I'm just curious. Does it make a difference whether you get beer on tap or in a bottle?
It does make a difference to some people. Me personally, some beers I guess taste better on draft. I'm not enough of an expert to tell you exactly why that is. But you can get a little bit better value having a beer on draft. It's less expensive, for the restaurant to purchase. The bottling process costs a little bit more. It doesn't make that big of a difference. But certain beers, I think are a little bit, better on draft. Wheat beers and, I don't think the difference is that significant. I'm a beer enthusiast. I can't say I'm a connoisseur. I'm sure there's beer connoisseurs that would tell you that it makes a big difference. I mean, good beer is good beer. It's not gonna, it's gonna taste great whether it's in a a glass or a, you know, a plastic cup or bottle, you know, good beer is good beer. So
is that, in other words, when you're getting it draft, in other words, you're using a keg of beer?
We're using a keg, yeah, a barrel of beer, yeah.
Okay, so you're getting a barrel of beer, and then it's hooked up so that, you know, like a soda fountain looking kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Oh, okay. Do you do beer and steak pairings?
We do. We're actually working on coming up with some beer dinners where we'll do probably a 5-course meal paired with different beers. We don't have pairings on the menu, but if somebody asks for recommendations, we'll certainly offer them.
So would it make a difference, let's say, for instance, the type of steak I have to be with a different beer or the type of food I'm eating?
The type of food certain beers are not going to go well with certain food. With a steak, maybe you might do a slightly different pairing if you were pairing a filet with a beer as opposed to a ribeye, because the ribeye is definitely going to be a little bit more intense in flavor. But there wouldn't be too much difference in the pairing there if you were going to pair a beer with a fish as opposed to a beer with a beer with mussels. A wheat beer and mussels is a great pairing. It wouldn't probably pair a wheat beer with steak, but you can. And really, there's the kind of general rules of thumb in terms of pairing, but it really comes down to personal preference and taste. There's really no right or wrong, when it comes to that. It's just personal preference.
How about do you find a lot of difference whether the beer is domestic or imported?
There are differences. I mean, it's a very big topic to get into. For instance, I think American brewers, especially craft brewers, tend to favor hoppy beers. The hops in the beers is going to give the beer a bitter taste. You see a lot of IPAs or India Pale Ales, which have a lot of hops and have a lot of that bitter flavor. You don't probably see that as much in a lot of imported beers, but some you do. I mean, Belgian beers, you see a lot of spicy, somewhat sweeter, malty beers. But then, Belgians have all different kind of styles that they're known for. So it's so varied. It's a difficult question. But you do tend to see certain styles of beer, a little bit more common in certain areas.
So, in terms of, are they all made with wheat, or if they're not made with wheat, what is the?
Well, the main components of beer is your barley, it's malted barley, hops, yeast, and water. There's other ingredients that can be added, such as fruit, wheat, different spices. But your basic ingredients are going to be your barley, your hops, your yeast, and your water. And you can have very different beers just based on the type of hops that you're using. The yeast, the barley. But those are your main components of the beer.
What if you're is there such a thing as a gluten-free beer?
There is a gluten-free beer, and it's we actually carry one. It's called Estrella Damm. It's a Spanish beer. It's actually a little bit unique. A lot of gluten-free beers are not made from barley. They'll use something called sorghum, which is a different kind of grain. Estreadam actually is made from barley. They have a proprietary process through which they extract the gluten, so the percentage of gluten that remains is so minuscule that it falls below the level, something like, I think there's, if you have, 20 parts per million or whatever it is, you still are considered to have gluten in the beer. This process gets it down to 6 parts per million or whatever it is, so it falls below that level and it's perfectly safer for people with gluten allergies. And it's nice because it is still made from barley, so you get a little bit more of a true beer flavor from it.
Now I want to get this back to something that I had on the menu that I want to pass on. Steakhouses tend to have cream spinach on
yes.
the side order.
Yes.
And this was like the best cream spinach I
Thank
ever
you.
Come across.
Yeah.
And you'll tell me how it's made, but I just what I want to comment about it is that what I find with and it's just any. Than any cooked spinach. It's like once you have it like cooked, it's partly taste, but partly like on your teeth or the roof of your mouth. You know what I'm talking about?
It loses a little bit of an aftertaste.
Yeah, it does that, and it kind of leaves something like, and I find it a difference, let's say, if I have raw spinach, especially raw baby spinach.
Right.
I completely different, but I understand that you use, you're not using, tell us how you're making it, sort of.
Well, we're not using frozen spinach, which a lot of places do. We use fresh, beautiful baby leaf spinach. We just make it with a simple bechamel, which is, it's essentially a mixture of milk or heavy cream with a roux, which is made from flour and butter. Just very simple. It's really just about using good product. I can't give you the exact recipe. It is sort of one of our signatures. This is the closely guarded secret. I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
It is
a signature. the spinach here is it's the same recipe that they've been using in the Bronx, and it's it really is a fantastic little side dish. It's certainly one of the best that I've had. But it really is just about it definitely costs a lot more money to use fresh good fresh baby leaf spinach. And you can certainly places get away with just buying it frozen, but it makes such a huge difference. And it is it's a steakhouse staple, so you really have to do it the right way.
Now I'm just curious in terms of like if somebody wants to make their own, if you're using like the baby spinach, would you like to cook it a very short time to make a good cream spinach? In other words, let's say, can you actually use it? I don't know. Can you actually like do it raw and then just add all the rest of it?
No,
to it?
You're definitely going to need to cook it off.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you exactly how long they cook it for. You don't want to overdo it, and you still want it to have just a little bit of a crunch to it. You don't want it to be too. You don't want it to be too mushy.
Right.
But you definitely wouldn't. You definitely wouldn't do it raw. You definitely need to cook the spinach.
Okay. And I know you have all other kind of sides, potatoes and things and whatever, and a lot of great appetizers.
We do. We have a terrific crab cake. We use, you know, jumbo lump crab meat, and you know, it's not just breading and butter. You're actually getting a lot of crab meat in there. I think that's fantastic. We have we do our rasher of bacon, which is your thick slab applewood smoked bacon. I think we just use a great quality bacon. It's kind of a meal in itself. And again, a steakhouse staple. We do a nice iceberg wedge salad, also a steakhouse staple, with a little crumbled bacon and blue cheese, and beautiful beefsteak tomatoes. And again, it really is. It's all about the quality of the product you're using. You know, we're very careful from the steaks to the produce. You have to be, you gotta buy the best if you want to serve the best.
One other comment I wanted to make, I wanted to share with you, because this is a thing that I kind of like had noticed. Other than Gallagher's, I forgot the name, but there was another restaurant that's like pretty nearby in Manhattan, another steakhouse. And the thing that I noticed is, when you go to steakhouses, there are only male waiters. Did you ever notice that?
You tend to see that at a lot of steakhouses. That's kind of classic. You have Peter Luger's is famous for the gruff old waiters that just not the friendliest. They get the job done. It's kind of part of the shtick of the whole thing. You tend to see male waiters. We have a mix. We have male. We have female. I don't know why that is in a steakhouse. Probably I think is a lot of steakhouses have been around for a long time, and they have same waiters that have been there for 20 or 30 years. So one of those things. But we hire male and female, and we have some great service here. So.
So in terms of in terms of facilities, you have some different areas to eat, right?
We have the main dining room, and we also have some banquet rooms, which we use as dining rooms on Friday and Saturday nights. When we're most busy, sometimes during the week, also we're busy enough that we need to use those rooms. But we do have those three rooms. Actually, it can be one big room or three smaller rooms, and we can accommodate parties anywhere from 12 to 75 people. We also have the grill room, which is where the main bar is. We have about 20 seats at the bar and about another 30 seats at tables in the bar. We offer a separate menu. We offer the full dinner menu in the bar as well, but we have a grill room menu that features some burgers, some different sandwiches, some bar snacks, and some lighter, more casual fare, and just kind of really good kind of upscale pub food, if you will. But again, you can get both menus in the bar room.
Now, I also have a quick question about in terms of burgers.
Yes.
Are you're not going to use the same cuts, right?
No. Well, for burgers, we actually we buy from Pat LaFreda, one of the best in the business. He supplies a lot of. A lot of big steakhouses, a lot of great burger joints. We have a custom blend that we buy from him. I won't go into the exact blend, but different, sometimes, burgers can be a blend of chuck meat, brisket, short rib, sirloin. Hanger, all different kinds. We have a blend that is mainly chuck and brisket, it's just a great blend. Pat LaFreda, I think, is probably just about the best in the business, and our burger is just a great burger. It's full of flavor. It's a nice size burger. We do about a 9 or 10 ounce burger. It's very flavorful. The chuck brisket is just a nice nice blend. Just a lot of lot of flavor in there.
I'm finding things on your menu I need to taste now.
Yeah, you'll have to come back. You have to
I'm
soon.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Well, as I said, I'll be back. If not anything. You don't have to tell me on the radio, but you said you're going to find out where I can get the quack beer.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure where exactly it's sold retail. I can tell you the distributor we buy it from is SKI Beer, and they have a fantastic selection of craft beers, domestic beers, imported beers. That's where we get the quack from. I don't know exactly where it's sold retail. It's pretty unique, pretty rare. You don't see it in too many places. And again, it is expensive. It costs us about probably about three times as much as any of the other beers that we have. But it's well worth it. Well worth it.
All right. We'll talk later so I can seek it out then. But
no problem.
In the meantime, okay. Well, I appreciate it. I know you got to get back to work. I appreciate your calling in, and just to let people know, it's jakesteakhouse.com.
Jakesteakhouse.com. Jake's Steakhouse
okay.
in East Meadow.
Okay, so there's one in East Meadow, Long Island, and there's one in the Bronx. But
the original
one
is in the Bronx
about,
on Broadway in Riverdale, right by Van Cortlandt Park.
All right. At some point, maybe I'll make my way up there just to. We're curious
Anytime,
about it.
Anytime, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a whole bunch, Michael.
Take care, Merle.
Okay. Bye.
Bye bye.
Wow. Well, okay. So we talked about, oh my, I'm really hungry. So we talked about lobster, talked about steak. Well, now it's time for dessert. You got to have dessert, right, Florian?
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Okay.
You got to have dessert after at the end of the meal. That's for sure. That's the good finishing.
One of the things like that I like to do is if I'm going to a restaurant and then I say, well, do you make your own dessert? And they'll say no. And sometimes I like to save it to go to a place where they're making the dessert, you know what I mean?
I understand that, because as soon as they don't make their own dessert, you never know which crap you're going to end up with. And it's just like, you know, because, you know, there is some dessert, you know, most of the time they buy frozen dessert or frozen cakes, you know, out of Restaurant Depot or, you know, those suppliers. And they're not always good. I mean, sometimes they are, but, they're not always good. So it's always great to sit in a restaurant where they have their own pastry chef and they do their own dessert. But unfortunately, the tendency is, you know, many restaurants are cutting pastry chefs because it's another person on the payroll and it costs money and they try to buy to outsource their dessert, but that's not always the best solution.
Yeah. Well, what I want to get into, see, the thing is, like, now, it's macaroons are popular, especially during Passover.
Yes, that's right. You're right. But, I mean, we've been...
And the macaroons, and the thing that I never liked, it doesn't matter you can even chocolate cover it, but it boiled down to, I don't necessarily like coconut.
Yeah,
and
they're not. Actually, the French macaron, I mean, as you
know,
as a manufacturer...
That's what I wanted to say, is that... There's a completely French version.
Yes, it's a completely different product, actually. I don't know why the coconut has been called macaron, but there's probably a reason behind it. But the French macaron are really a different product. They look like, I mean, they kind of look like a mini burger a little bit.
That's a great way to describe it.
I heard that a lot at the beginning when we started the business back in 2007. So it's just like, you know, macarons were not popular at all on the market, and I heard supplying, you know, we've been supplying food service a lot with French macarons. We are making over 3 million macarons a year, and at the beginning of the business when we started back in 2006 or 2007, I was visiting by myself some chefs in some hotels, and they were like, oh, this is a funny looking Cookie looks like a mini burger, so I heard that a lot. Now we don't hear it anymore because many consumers and chefs know what is a French macaron.
Right. And it's like what you would call if you want to say the bun looking part.
Yes.
Is basically am I getting it's like egg whites, almond and.
Yeah, that's right. It's egg white, almond, and sugar. There is three ingredients on the shell, and the shell is baked separately, and the macaron is basically the assembly of two shells and with a filling in the middle. And the shells are made with egg white, whipped egg white, like a meringue, whipped egg white and sugar, and almond flour, which is called also almond meal. And those are the main ingredients on the shell. And it's a very delicate cookie. It's not easy to make at home. We sometimes get a lot of requests, like, you know, can you send me a recipe? Can I make it at home? It's not impossible, but it's not an easy recipe. And to give you a little story, this is the kind of, French macarons are a really sensitive recipe, and usually as a polite way between French pastry chefs, in France, we never share our own recipes of macaron. When I have a friend and a pastry chef friend, and this is something that I will never ask from him, like, can you give me your macaron recipe? This is something that we never share.
Now,
we share other
say...
recipes, but not this one. As soon as you have a good one that works, you just keep it for yourself.
Now, in terms of when I said the recipe, is there different recipes for the shell itself, or when you say
I have to say that the shell are pretty. It's pretty much a basic recipe, but there is just some twist in. You know, so everybody has some twist into it, and especially in the making, and there is two ways of making a French macaron cookie. I mean, in terms of the shell. And as I say, it's whipped egg white and sugar, so which is called a meringue. And some pastry chefs like to work with French meringue technique, which is pretty much you whip your egg white and you just add your granulated sugar in it. That's the simple way. And some other chefs, like we do at Man Mac, is work on an Italian meringue technique, which... the difference is we whip the egg white also, but the sugar is cooked. The sugar is cooked on the stove with a little bit of water. It's cooked at high temperature, and we pour the boiling sugar syrup, if you wish, and into the egg white. So it gives just a different structure. It's just a different technique, but it works. It works pretty much as the same.
It just melts. When you're eating it, there's not really much to chew.
No, that's right. I mean, a macaron, you know, the right definition of a macaron, I mean, besides the flavors, because the sky's only the limit on the flavors. You can pretty much work with any flavor you want. But the right definition for a macaron is supposed to be, when you bite in it, it's supposed to be lightly crispy on the outside, you're supposed to have some chew on the outside, and it's supposed to be very melting in your mouth and tender in the inside, and that's the feeling who makes that sensation, and it's a great cookie. I mean, it's just like, you know, when you have an assortment of macaron in the box, they are so colorful, they are a perfect finger food. And it can be a snack, it can be a gift, it's the alternative. I always call it like the alternative to chocolate gift. I mean, you can either, you know, offer a box of chocolate as a gift or a box of macaron. It's really an upscale product.
Yeah. Now, when you have, in terms of the flavors,
mm-hmm.
are you talking about I see a whole list of flavors. Are you talking about... the inside part
actually, when you make macaron, the shell is just lightly colored. Most of the shells are the same flavor. They are not really flavored, besides the chocolate who contain cocoa powder in the shell, but otherwise the shells have not no taste, but they just have an almond taste, and they just the lightly color. We use a drop of food color, and it's just to give the color of the shell. And but what makes the taste and the flavor of the macaron is really the inside, is the filling.
Yeah, I see the list. I see. It says chocolate, coconut, chocolate, mm-hmm. orange, white chocolate, vanilla, coffee, pistachio, raspberry, lemon, apricot, hazelnut, cinnamon, peanut butter, almond, matcha.
That's right.
Tea.
Sorry?
It says matcha tea.
Matcha tea is the Japanese green tea. You know, the one that comes in a powder form. And the matcha tea and green tea, and we have so many flavors. We have around 14 to 16 flavors on the catalog all year long, and on top of it, we're doing some seasonal assortment.
I'm most curious because when I write, you're gonna have to send me the other flavors. So
I know I sent you some. Did you enjoy
them? Yeah, I also want to make sure I get in to talk about the madeleines.
Mm-hmm.
And what they are versus the macarons.
So versus the macaron, Madeleine is, of course, it's really a different product than French macaron. They are, I should say, they are less upscale, but they are very enjoyable. And French Madeleine is pretty much a tea cake that will be in the shape of a seashell. And it's been like this for a long time. It's been developed. We believe that it had appeared in French Madeleine have been created in the 16th century. And it's a very good tea cake. And we having unfortunately that you know some a real French Madeleine is very good and very enjoyable. Unfortunately, on the market there is some fake and imitation of French Madeleine. They just call it Madeleine because it's the shape of a seashell, but it has nothing to do with the real product. And but it's a great product too. And we have at Madmac we have four flavors of those Madeleines. The plain one, which is pretty much the butter Madeleine, and the pistachio, which is really the best. It became over the years the best seller, and the hazelnut and the chocolate.
Now, when you, in terms of course, I'm not going to ask you the whole recipe. What goes into, aside of flavors, what is it made from?
The ingredient of Madeleine is pretty much basic ingredient, like a little bit like a pancake. So it's flour, eggs, sugar, and butter. Those are really the basic ingredients. And it of course, it's like a cake. It contains some wheat flavor, unlike the macaron. The macaron are gluten-free. They don't have flour at all.
Okay. And by the way, you always use butter. You don't use do you use palm oil in any of this?
You mean shortening and everything? I'm trying to stay away from it. It's just like I think it's just bad product. And I understand that it's been used in the industry a lot, and especially in the mass market industry. It's just a matter of cost and not a matter of taste, of course. But, you know, all those shortening and everything, we found out that it's a funny thing because, you know, I mean, I'm sure you do remember that 20 years ago, everybody was saying that butter is bad for you and it clogs your artery and you should not consume that much butter
right.
And everything. And even though some people were saying that, hey, look at the French, they eat butter all year long and they don't have more heart attack than we do here in the U.S. And so, of course, it kind of, you know, the mass market jumped on it and started to use those hydrogenated oils and shortenings and everything. And now we're finding out that, with studies that actually those shortenings are really bad for you, and they are the one who clog your arteries and everything. And actually, it's better to eat butter with moderation, of course, but it's way better to eat butter than eating those shortenings. So I'm really trying to stay away from it. But not only that, it's a matter of taste. Also, it's not only about cost. Of course, it costs. I mean, of course, butter costs way more than shortening, but. But the taste, I mean, when you make a good product, a pound cake or a madeleine with real butter, I mean, you can taste the butter on the finish on your palate, and that's really great.
Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure we get in the website that people can get that. It's Mad Mac, so MADMACNYC.com.
.com, MadMacNYC.com.
Even
yes,
though you're not in New York City, you're actually in New Jersey.
We're in New Jersey, yes, but very close to New York City, and we decided, actually, when we set up the website like 4 years ago, Mad Mac was taken, and
oh,
MadMac.com
okay.
was not available, and so we decided to go with MadMacNYC.com.
Now, can people go to stores and find this, or is it something like you go online and order?
So we have our Mad Mac account distributed through some retail, and especially like in the city in Manhattan, Dine De Luca Carriera product. They have it under their own brand, but it's it's the same macaron. It's actually, I mean, if you purchase any macaron in Dine De Luca, they are coming from us, even though they're labeled Dine De Luca, which is great. And and on top of it, we're working with a lot of distributors, so I have to admit that we have our macaron somewhere in some store that I don't know of.
Oh,
and,
okay. I'm wondering, they just opened a Fairway market here.
They might have it. I'm not sure. And
I'll
macaron are everywhere. And when we started in 2006, we were the only manufacturer in U.S. making macaron in large quantity for distributors, like you know, being able to buy pallets. We are the only one, and now we have some competition, obviously, but which is great, I mean, for the product. French macaron are getting a lot of press lately, and it's great for the consumer. They, you know, people are aware of it, that this product is available everywhere. And as I said, I mean, it's a great finger food. It's a great snack, and it's a great gift. So it can go in many applications, even in restaurants. We have a lot of hotels like Ritz-Carlton in U.S. Most of the Ritz-Carlton use our macaron, and they use it in the room. They use it in restaurants, you know, on the plate as a, you know, instead of having chocolate served with the coffee, they just have a plate with like two or three macarons to their clients, and I think it's great. I mean, this cookie the only problem with this cookie is he has a short shelf life. As soon as he's at room temperature, if it's left outside,
right,
it lasts between 2 and 3 days. It doesn't last like weeks. So that's the only thing. So he has to be refrigerated at all time almost.
Yeah, I'm sure the ones I have won't last that long.
That's good news.
they'll be eaten. I don't. I'll be getting back to you after the show to talk about.
Okay, that's
a
good idea.
Oh, and the only I just have one more question because
sure.
I see was the time. Because you sell cakes, right?
We don't really do cakes. We are not in the cake business. What we do is for our customers, because I used to, my partner and I used to be the chef at the chefs at Fauchon in New York City, and we used to have a panel of customers that were ordering especially wedding cakes, and we kept doing wedding cake even though when we opened Mad Mac, and we are kind of famous for a wedding cake called Croquembouche, which is pretty much a pyramid of choux puff filled with custard and dipped in caramel and stick together. So it's very elegant, and there is pictures on our website, actually, on madmacnyc.com.
Okay.
And we are specialized in that. We didn't. This is not a business that we decided to grow in a way, but we just kept it in house because we had some demands from previous customers from Fauchon. And since Fauchon left the country and shut down his store on Park Avenue, and those customers kind of followed us, and we kept supplying, you know, some consumer with this type of wedding cake. So we've been making, you know, fewer years, but it's not something that we do on a regular basis.
Well, I also want to comment that this is another great idea for the holidays of gift giving.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
Something
people
aren't going to say, oh, what the heck is that?
No, it's
go, oh,
it's a great idea,
wow.
Yeah, for gift. I mean, it's a great gift, and It's affordable, even though it's kind of an upscale and a bit expensive cookies. But I explain to customer when we talk about, even though now people are aware of it, that French macaron is a cookie that cannot be mechanized in a way. I mean, the making of it cannot be mass produced. Because there is no line, there is no machine that can do, you know, what we do by hand, and it's a very fragile cookie that has to be assembled, filled, and assembled and packaged by hand, and that's one of the reasons behind it. And besides that, is definitely the ingredients. I mean, almond flour, and we use white chocolate for filling and everything. So of course, it add up, but it's. It's a great gift. It's kind of, you know, it's a luxury cookie, of course, but it's affordable. You get on our website, you get a box of 12 for $20 plus shipping. We have some customers that come pick up directly in our kitchen in Paterson, New Jersey, and but we ship nationwide, and we ship. Of course, it has to be refrigerated, so we ship with ice pack and everything. So we are pretty good at it, and. On top of it, we created that special packaging that you receive, Mel, a special tray where each macaron is in his own niche, and to prevent breakage, because that was one of the main concerns when we started the business, is how can we ship macaron? They are so fragile, and
right.
And we don't want them to arrive crushed. And we found the idea and we worked on it. It took us a while, but now we are very we're pretty good at it, and we are able to ship nationwide macaron. When it's far away from New York, of course, it's second air maximum. It cannot be shipped ground to California, just to give an example. And but otherwise, we ship ground in New Jersey, Connecticut. Vermont, New York State, of course, and everything. And this is something that this is one of the cookies for the holidays. I think it's a great idea. I mean, when you open a box of macaron, when you have a box of macaron at home during a party or something like this, believe me, your guests are very happy. It makes people happy. I love this cookie. It's the best cookie in the world.
Yeah, this is
I'm entirely convinced. I'm still eating 20 macarons a day.
Are
that's
you?
My diet.
Oh, God. Listen, I don't blame you. Okay. Well, as I said, I'm gonna end this show, and then I'm gonna call you back because I gotta talk to you about.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mel.
Trying the other ones.
Thank you so much for having me. Okay.
Oh sure. And again, everybody, it's Mad Mac, MadMacNyc.
.com.
.com.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay,
Florian, have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Talk to you later.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, yes. Man, now I really made myself hungry with this here. And Barbara, if you're listening, if I didn't make you hungry, even if you probably ate. I didn't go. I forgot to put on the chat, Barbara. I forgot to put the chat up on here. And if you probably sent me an email, I haven't had time to look at the email. If you sent that to me, I know this is almost worse than talking about fairy tale brownies, which I forgot to even do. Anyway. So until next time, I don't know what I'm doing for the next show, but I know when I get done here, I'm gonna go eat. I'm going to be making something. I have a brand new smoker that I got from, I think it's Cameron is the company. And I'm going to be smoking some chicken breasts. And that's what I'm going to have for dinner. I definitely know what I'm having for dessert. But anyway, until next time, everybody. Have a good day, evening. I know I went over time, but it's okay. Have a good day, evening, or whatever, and enjoy.